This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You've seen the movies. The explorers venture under the volcano where there's a big cavern filled with molten liquid rock. But in fact, under a real volcano, there is no big tank. It turns out, according to new research, the magma spends very little of its time in liquid form. To the untrained eye, that stored magma would look like a hot rock, solid enough to drive a truck over. But geologically speaking, it's a mush. That's a mix of crystals in suspension. And that mush can turn rapidly into a flowing state if it gets warmed up just a little bit, the same way that a jar of peanut butter can be pretty solid in the fridge, but go runny if you warm it up. And joining me now to talk about what's going on inside that volcano is Carrie Cooper. She's an associate professor in the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at the University of California, Davis, and one of the authors of a paper on how magma is stored beneath volcanoes, published this week in the journal Nature. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira.
Let's talk first, what's the definition? What's the difference between magma and lava?
So basically, magma and lava are both forms of molten rock, and we call it magma when it's below the surface, and we call it lava once it actually erupts onto the surface.
That simple. So there's no big pool of liquid rock under a volcano?
Well, there may occasionally be big pools of liquid rock under a volcano, but not most of the time. And so the idea is that there has to be at some point, we know there has to be mostly liquid magma, or we would never see any eruptions at the surface. But the question that we set out to address is, what does it look like most of the time?
Yeah.
So it probably, you know, waxes and wanes between these two states, between being mostly crystalline and mostly liquid, and so difficult to move versus easy to move. And so the really surprising result is that it spends, at least in Mount Hood, very short periods of time in this highly mobile, hot state.
Describe the state that it's in a little more detail than I did.
The state that it's mostly in, you mean?
Yeah.
The crystal mush?
Yeah.
So this is, it's a mixture of molten rock and crystalline material, so crystals that formed as the liquid cooled. So the key to understanding all of this is temperature. So you know that you have at very high temperatures, everything's going to be liquid, and at very low temperatures, in a relative sense, it's going to be solid. But there's this interval in between where it's partially molten and partially crystalline. And that's where the behavior changes are really pretty dramatic. And so what we did is we sort of identified for this particular composition that the temperature of 750 degrees Celsius, that's about 1380 degrees Fahrenheit, that's where you have this transition between something which is relatively hot and mostly liquid and behaves like a liquid, and something that's still pretty hot but relatively cool and mostly crystalline and behaves more like a solid.
So if it becomes hotter than that magic point there, does it does it force itself up out? Is that what creates the volcano eruption?
You know, there's a lot of debate about what actually triggers eruptions. And one of the main mechanisms that's been proposed is that you have this resident magma inside a reservoir, and some new magma comes up from depth and basically heats it up and also mixes it with it and sort of over-pressurizes the system and kind of kicks it into an eruptive state. And a volcano, we wouldn't have persistent volcanoes if they weren't constantly being fed with magma from great depths. So the processes that we're talking about are happening relatively shallow in the Earth's crust. They're about maybe 4 to 5 kilometers, so about 2.5 to 3 miles below the surface at Mount Hood. But a lot of things are happening deeper, too. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is that just as you cool and crystallize the magma, the volcanic gases that start out dissolved in the liquid can't stay dissolved in the liquid as you get smaller and smaller amounts of liquid. And so they exsolve, they form bubbles, and those bubbles have a big volume, so you can overpressurize the system that way, too.
So it blows its top, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And so we don't really know the relative importance of those two mechanisms. We know that both of them operate. And we have a lot of evidence chemically from the things that erupt that this sort of reinjection of magma is one of the main triggers of eruptions.
And one of the points your paper was making is that a volcano can go pretty quickly from a dormant state to one that it's erupting. And you don't even like the term dormant, do you?
No, dormant is fine. There's a fine line between dormant and extinct. It's that's in some ways kind of an arbitrary distinction. We just sort of draw the line and say that if a volcano hasn't erupted within the last 10,000 years, we call it extinct. That doesn't mean that a few of those couldn't ever erupt again. Right. And it also doesn't mean that all of volcanoes that have erupted in the last 10,000 years will erupt again. So it's kind of an arbitrary distinction. But yeah, so going from a dormant state to erupting can happen very quickly. And our paper is not the first one to point out this particular conclusion. In fact, the work in our paper was done by my co-author Adam Kent and some of his students in a previous paper. But at Mount Hood, what they found is that the mixing, this injection of this new magma, occurred maybe only a few weeks to maybe a couple of months prior to the most recent eruptions at Mount Hood. And that's consistent with other areas, some other studies. For example, Santorini, it was within about 100 years. There's some other studies that also kind of show this weeks to months to decades kind of time frame.
Mount Hood and the other Cascades, they're sort of a family of Pacific Rim volcanoes, right?
Exactly.
The subduction zones where you have one plate sliding under the other.
That's right. And so they're kind of a particular class of volcanoes, if you will, and they all tend to kind of share similar sorts of behavior. So one of the other things we did in the studies, we collected together a bunch of sort of partial data sets from other volcanic systems, many of which are these kind of subduction zone related volcanoes. And we don't have complete data sets for any other volcanoes yet. That's something we're hoping to do in the future. But the partial data sets have a lot of hints that maybe a lot of these volcanoes behave in a similar way. Now, we also have information that other volcanoes, like, for example, Hawaii or maybe some of the other sort of systems around the world might behave differently. They might spend more of their time in a mostly liquid state. Mm-hmm. But one of the interesting questions then is, why is one volcano in this state most of the time and another volcano is in a different state? What are controlling these things? And that's what we really need to know in order to be able to, you know, sometime in the future, be able to forecast what they're going to do.
That would be something, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah.
Well, thank you, Dr. Cooper, for taking time to be with us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Cary Cooper, Associate Professor in the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at UC Davis.